Model Test 1.
Section A. Mini Lecture.
In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the mini lecture once only. While listening to the mini lecture, please complete the gap-filling task with no more than 3 words for each gap. Make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable. You may use the blank sheet for note-taking. You have 30 seconds to preview the gap-filling task. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. When it is over, you will be given 3 minutes to check your work.
Welcome to Further Education Information Week. This is the Physical Education Faculty's session, and I'm the head of the faculty. During the course of this morning, we hope to give you a clear idea of what we offer in our training programs, and we will look at the types of courses and the entry requirements, if any, for those courses. Some of these courses are open to school leavers, but for some you need previous qualifications or relevant successful employment. So firstly, the Physical Fitness Instructor's course is offered as a 6-month certificate course, which includes an important component of personal fitness, but there are no specific entry requirements. For sports administrators, we provide a 4-month certificate course, but you should be aware that this is designed for those who are in employment. This employment must be current and related to sports administration. For the sports psychologist course, we offer a 1-year diploma course, but this diploma course is available only to those who already hold a degree in psychology, so you need to make sure you have that before you apply to do this course. For physical education teachers, this degree course is designed for preparing students to teach in primary and secondary schools and needs no prior qualifications as it is entered directly by school leavers. And lastly, for the recreation officer's course, we offer a 6-month certificate. Entry to this course normally includes applicants of a wide range of ages and experiences, but we do not insist on any prerequisites for this course. All physical education activity courses stress the recreational and carryover values of that activity rather than the ability or performance level of the students. 1-credit courses are offered on a quarter basis and meet for 2 hours of class per week for a half semester. Grading is on a pass or fail basis contingent upon attendance and participation in the activity. A maximum of 4 1-credit physical education courses are applicable toward graduation, but these courses are not required. Students are encouraged to register for 2nd and 4th quarter classes during regular fall and spring registration. Remember that this is a vocational training institute. We train you so that you can take up a particular kind of job, so it is important that you know the main roles of the jobs, what the work is like, and what kind of qualities you need to succeed at them. A physical fitness instructor works in health and fitness centers preparing individual programs for ordinary members of the public. Physical fitness instructors prepare routines of exercises to suit the individual client's age and level of fitness. Sports administrators run clubs and sporting associations, making sure a sports event works smoothly by planning and controlling the business, finance, marketing, and organization. Their duties include such things as booking playing fields with local councils and organizing the schedule of games or events for the club, so they need good organizational skills. The specific responsibilities of a sports administrator can vary considerably according to the level of their post, the organization they work for, and its context. These can range from routine administration, managing high-spec complexes and resources, to working with a regional and national political and ethical profile. Sports psychologists spend time with professional athletes, helping them approach competition with a positive mental attitude to enable them to achieve their personal best. They do this by improving motivation and concentration or assisting with stress management. Sports psychology is a branch of sports science. It is the scientific study of the psychological factors that are associated with participation in sport, exercise, and other types of physical activity. The contribution made by sports psychologists is in two areas: helping athletes through psychological treatment methods to achieve optimum mental health and enhance sporting performance, often involving techniques like visualization and relaxation, conducting research to understand how participation in sport affects an individual's psychological health and well-being throughout their lifespan. Physical education, or PE, teachers instruct young students in how to exercise, play sport, and do other recreational activities correctly and safely. PE teachers help the development of coordination, balance, posture, and flexibility with things like simple catching and throwing skills. The following are the major responsibilities of being a PE teacher. Most of the time, you will be in charge of teaching health and/or PE classes during the day. Many teachers have to teach at more than one school. At the secondary school, you may have to teach a health class or two. Coaching is another duty you may choose to do, especially early on in a career. In fact, you may choose to coach several sports. You are not expected to be expert in all sports, but must be able to show students the basic techniques involved in a wide range of activities. Other duties that you may have to partake in during the day. And of course, you will need to attend faculty and parent-teacher conference meetings throughout the year. Lastly, many physical education teachers are required to do a year-end field day or a physical education show of some kind. Recreation officers often find themselves working for local government authorities and local groups. Their aim is to raise people's awareness of healthy lifestyles and improve general fitness through arranging recreational activities for groups of all ages, from the very young to the elderly. There are many other job opportunities which our graduates can look forward to. If you are interested in any of these, please drop in on me later. So much for today.
Now, you have 3 minutes to check your work. This is the end of Section A mini lecture.
Section B, interview.
In this section, you will hear one interview. The interview will be divided into two parts. At the end of each part, five questions will be asked about what was said. Both the interview and the questions will be spoken once only. After each question, there will be a 10-second pause. During the pause, you should read the four choices of A, B, C, and D, and mark the best answer to each question. You have 30 seconds to preview the questions. Now, listen to part one of the interview.
Good morning, listeners. Today, we are very happy to have Dr. Michael Williams to discuss evolution of language. Well, Michael.
Thank you. Very pleased to meet you all here.
Michael, there have been many theories about why languages change. Can you give us some examples, please?
Of course. The first established theory of language change is one of decay and decadence, proposed in the 18th century view. Well, their reasoning is that the old Indo-European languages, like Sanskrit, Greek and Latin, all have complex declension and conjugation schemes. Over time, the number of cases dropped, and the modern Indo-European languages have far fewer cases for declension and conjugation. It is said that people get increasingly careless about their speech, so they are decadent and have allowed the once complex language to decay into such a simple language.
Sounds interesting.
But this decadence argument has one major flaw. Even though the number of declensions and conjugations has dwindled, other parts of speech, such as particles and auxiliary verbs, have evolved to take their place. Anything that can be expressed in the ancient tongue can still be expressed today. Ultimately, this theory is highly subjective, as it relies on personal opinions, not scientific facts of what is highly evolved and what is decadent. So, strictly speaking, this cannot be called scientific explanation.
Right. Is there any other theory?
The next theory, proposed by the neo-grammarians, is one of natural process. They stated that changes are automatic and mechanical, and therefore cannot be observed or controlled by the speakers of the language. They found that what to human ear a single sound is actually a collection of very similar sounds. They call it low-level deviation from an idealized form. They argued that language change is simply a slow shift of the idealized form by small deviations.
Are there any problems concerned with this theory, too?
Of course. The obvious problem here is that without some kind of reinforcement, the deviation might go back and forth and cancel out any change. Well, then the neo-grammarians patched this theory by adding reasons for reinforcing the deviation, such as simplification of sounds, or children imperfectly learning the speech of their parents.
Simplification of sounds. Can you explain it a little further?
Sure. The simplification of sounds basically states that certain sounds are easier to pronounce than others, so that natural tendency of the speakers is to modify the hard-to-say sounds to easier ones. An example would be the English word nuclear, which many people pronounce as nuclear.
But who knows which one is more difficult to pronounce, nuclear or nuclear?
Exactly. Different people may give different answers. Simplification no doubt exists, but using it as a reason of language change is too subjective to be scientific. There is another problem with children incorrectly learning the language of their parents. Let's take an extreme case in the form of immigrants. What is observed is that children of immigrants almost always learn the language of their friends at school, regardless of their parents' dialect or original language. Children of British immigrants in the United States, for example, nearly always speak with one of the many regional American accents. So in this case, the parent's linguistic contribution becomes less important than the social group the child is in.
I agree. Any other theories?
This is the end of part one of the interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on what you have just heard.
Question 1. Which one is not Old Indo-European language?
Question 2. What is the main problem with the theory of decay and decadence?
Question 3. Which statement is wrong according to decay and decadence theory of language?
Question 4. Which can be the best example of simplification of sounds?
Question 5. According to Michael, why do children of immigrants have problems in learning their mother tongue?
Now, listen to part 2 of the interview.
Well, the last theory advanced during the last century is a social one, advocated by the American linguist William Lebov. What he found was that at the beginning, a small part of a population pronounces certain words that have, for example, the same vowel, differently than the rest of the population. This occurs naturally since humans don't all reproduce exactly the same sounds. However, at some later point in time, for some reason, this difference in pronunciation starts to become a signal for social and cultural identity. Others of the population who wish to be identified with the group either consciously or unconsciously adopt this difference, exaggerate it, and apply it to change the pronunciation of other words. If given enough time, the change ends up affecting all words that possess the same vowel, so that this becomes a regular linguistic sound change.
This is a lot more reasonable.
Right. A similar phenomena apply to the grammar and to the lexicon of languages. An interesting example is that of computer-related words creeping into standard American languages like bug, crash, net, email, etc. Well, these words were originally used by computer scientists, but with the boom in the internet, everybody wants to become technology savvy. So these computer science words start to filter into the mainstream language.
Among all of the above-mentioned theories, which one do you advocate?
The social theory, of course. Humans are, after all, social animals and rarely do things without a social factor.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for telling us so much valuable information about language change.
You're welcome.
This is the end of part 2 of the interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on what you have just heard. Question 6. Which one is true about social theory of language change?
Question 7. According to William Lebov, which statement is wrong?
Question 8. Why does computer language start to filter into the standard language?
Question 9. What is Michael's attitude towards the social theory of language change?
Question 10. How many scientific explanations of language change are introduced by Michael?